Dawn had broken free of the mountains only an hour before. Smoke and some of his old gun hawks had left the Sugarloaf hours before first light, stopping along the way at the other small spreads.
Peyton! Peyton, you out here?
I'm over here, Smoke!
We're here, Peyton. Is everybody okay?
Yeah, we're all fine. Our place sure isn't, though.
So what happened?
TF Riders. They came riding in, hooting and hollering, guns shooting. We ran to the woods as soon as the house caught fire. Left with the clothes on our backs, and that's pretty much it. We just sat there, watching our life's work burn away. We watched the men shoot the horses and the pigs. Every last one of them.
Did you catch any of their faces? Sheriff Carson might...
No, they was wearing hoods. And the horses all had different fake brands. Got no proof it was TF, but it was TF. They burned down the barn, smashed all the windows, even trampled the damn garden. I tried to be friends with Tilden Smoke. I went over to his place and spoke with him. He seemed to be reasonable enough. Thanked me for coming over. Now this. They even turned the wagon over. Broke off a wheel. That can be fixed. We got nothing left.
The Apache Kid returned from his tracking.
Track's heading for the TF spread. Just as straight as an arrow, that's where they're heading.
But it's no proof.
No. So what are you gonna do?
Pull out. What else is there to do?
We'll help you rebuild, just like we're doing with Wilbur Mason.
And then what? What happens after that? I'll tell you. The same thing all over again. No. I'll find me some horses, fix that busted wheel, and take off. This land ain't worth dying over, Smoke. It just ain't.
That's not what you told me a few weeks back.
Well, I changed my mind. And don't feel like jawing about it no more. My mind is made up. Taking what we can salvage and pulling out. Heading up north of here. I'll see you, man.
Peyton turned and walked off, catching up with his wife.
Peyton! Let him go, Smoke. He's not gonna last anywhere out here. First time a drought hits him, he'll pack up and pull out. The locusts come, he'll head out again. Always looking for an easy life, but he'll never find it. You know yourself, it takes a hard man to make it out here. Peyton's weak, so's his woman. And them kids are whiners. He'll leave the land pretty soon, I'm figuring. He'll get him a job in some little store selling shoes and ribbons, and pretty soon he'll find something wrong with that job. But it ain't never gonna be his fault. It'll always be the fault of someone else. Forget him, Smoke. He ain't got no sand in him.
Smoke hated to say it, but he felt Charlie was right in his assessment of Peyton. Tilden had burned Wilbur Mason out. That had just made Wilbur and his family all the more determined to stay and fight.
Good luck, Peyton.
The man didn't even turn around, just waved his hand and kept on walking. Somehow, that gesture, or lack of it, made Smoke mad as hell. He wondered if he'd ever see Peyton or his family again. He figured if he didn't, he wouldn't lose any sleep over the loss. The few other small rancher farmers in the high country met that afternoon on a plateau, just about halfway between Smoke Sugarloaf and the beginning of the TF range. And it was, for the most part, a quiet, subdued gathering of men. Mike Garrett and his two hands, Wilbur Mason and Bob Colby, Ray Johnson and his hired hand, Nolan Edwards and his two oldest boys, Steve Matlock, Smoke, and his gun hands, and the Reverend Ralph Morrow, wearing a pair of jeans and checkered shirt.
Ralph is going to buy some land from me, farm some and ranch a little, preach part-time. The minister come up with a pretty good idea, I'm thinking, but we'll get to his idea in a minute. Anybody got any objections to Ralph joining our group?
I ain't got no objections, Smoke. I'm just wondering if him being a preacher and all, will he fight?
You're Wilbur Mason, right?
That's right.
Ever heard of the Cincinnati Kid?
Bare-knuckle boxer, tough as nails, retired about 8 years ago.
That was me.
But didn't you...
Yeah, I killed a man with my fists. I didn't mean to, but I did. As to whether I'll fight, yes. For my family, my land, and my friends, I'll fight.
Good enough for me, by God. So how about that other idea, Smoke?
Smoke walked to the edge of the flats.
That road right there connects Danner and Signal Hill. 7-8 miles further down, you gotta cut south to get to Fontana. Right, Nolan?
Right.
Pearlie is riding hard to the county seat right now. The Reverend and his wife Bountiful come up with this idea at nooning. Right here, boys. Right here on this plateau. But back yonder a ways, there's gonna be a town. We don't need Fontana. The land the town will be built on is gonna be filed on by Pearlie. He's carrying the money to buy some of it outright. When the surveyor was through here last year, he left a bunch of his markings and such at the house. Never did come back for him. Sally remembered him this morning. Everything is going to be legal and right. My wife is putting up the money to build a large general store. I figure that once I explain it all to Lewis Longmont, he'll see the humor in it and drop some of his money in. Pearlie is carrying a letter to the bank at the county seat. Me and my wife have some money there. She has a heap more than I do. Wilbur Mason here and his wife is going to run the store for us. Wilbur owned a store back east of here at one time, so they both know what to do. Day after tomorrow, there's going to be wagons rolling in here. Lumber and a lot of it. We're going to have several buildings here, including the sheriff's office and a jail.
Everybody was grinning now.
We're going to have a saloon. Because you all know that a saloon is just as much a meeting place as it is a place to drink. We're going to have us a cafe with home cooking. The women will see to that. It'll bring in some money, and I know you all could use that. A church, too, where we can all go to services come Sunday morning. And a school. Both Sally and Bountiful are schoolmarms. Once the wives of Beaconfield and Jackson hear about this town, with a church and proper schoolhouse, don't you think they won't be putting the pressure on their husbands to lean towards us?
Who's going to be the sheriff?
Why, Charlie Starr, of course. He's still got an old badge he wore some years back down close to Durango. I think he'd make a damn good one. Now, we want this to be kept secret as long as possible. Soon as the wagons start rolling in, though, the cat's going to be out of the bag. But by that time, there won't be a damn thing Tilden Franklin can do about it except cuss. Now here's something else. There ain't no post office in Fontana. Never has been. We've always had to ride over to either Banner or Signal Hill to the post office. We can post a letter on the stage that comes through Fontana, but that don't always mean it'll get where it's going. Sally wrote a letter this morning to the proper people up in Denver, and also to her folks who have a lot of high-up connections back east, so I think we'll get us a post office. Now the name. Come pretty easy, too. Last evening, I was talking to Ralph here. His wife Bountiful was real taken with something as they were riding by. Right there. They come to this point, she said, "Oh, look at that beautiful Big Rock." So what say we call it Big Rock? Big Rock, Colorado.
You're gonna have to say that again, Clint, because I think I must have misheard you with that bum ear I got in a fight. That son of a bitch is doing what now?
He's building the town. Calling it Big Rock, Colorado.
Well, he can't do that. I already done built the town, a proper one.
Maybe he can, boss. But somebody forgot to tell him that. Him and that goddamn preacher and their wives. And let me tell you something about that preacher man. He's done up and bought some land from Smoke Jensen, and his cabin is damn near complete. Maybe you ought to know this, too. That preacher is more than just a preacher. He fought for some years under the name of the Cincinnati Kid.
Cincinnati Kid? Oh, God damn, I read about him. He killed a man with his fist during a fight. Somebody named Big Iron Mike or something like that. What's the point of all this, Clint? What does Jensen hope to prove by it?
Damned if I know, boss. I figured with his reputation, when we burned Mason out, he'd come shooting. He didn't. I figured when we done it to Velvet and killed Adam, Smoke would come a-shooting. He didn't. Luis and his bunch burned out Peyton, and Smoke builds him a town. I can't figure it.
I won't even ask if the town is legal.
It's legal. And that lawyer Hunt Brooke and his wife done moved his practice out of Fontana and up to Big Rock. I spied on them some this morning. Then I nosed around Big Rock myself. That's a mighty fine store that's going up. And the smells from that cafe got my mouth watering. Some of the Nestor's wives and older girls is doing the cooking, and them miners is swarming all over the place. They got them a saloon, too. Big Rock Saloon. No games, no girls. A nice church and school combination going up, too. And a jail.
And I guess they elected themselves a sheriff, did they?
Sure did. Charlie Starr's the sheriff, and Luke Nations is his deputy.
Well, he can't do this. A damn gunslick can't just go and screw with me. Me! Tilden Franklin!
He's making everything turn to shit, goddammit!
On the bright side, the herds are looking good.
Oh, now that's wonderful, Clint. I can't tell you how goddamn impressed I am to hear that. It's great to hear that some goddamn cows are doing fine. All they need is some grass to eat and a place to shit. We're talking real money here, Clint. Gold, land, kickbacks, and Smoke Jensen standing in my way. I'm making thousands of dollars a week on gold shares. I should be making several more thousands in kickbacks, except that goddamn sheriff I put into office has turned holy roller on me. And I'm paying several thousand dollars a month for some of the finest gun hands in the West, and they can't seem to rid the country of one Smoke Jensen. That son of a bitch rides all over the country, usually by himself, and my so-called gun slicks can't or won't tackle him. God damn it! And now Johnny North is taken up with a damn Nesta woman. Judge Proctor hadn't had a drink in weeks. He's turned as righteous as Monte Carson. My men are afraid to go into my old goddamn town.
What do you want to do, boss?
Tell Louise to take his men into town and rid it of Monte and Proctor now.
Boss, are you talking about treeing the town?
Exactly.
Clint shook his head. He wished Tilden would get Smoke Jensen out of his mind and just get on with the business of ranching. The big foreman wished a lot of things, but he knew that Smoke Jensen had become an obsession with Tilden. He wasn't even talking much about Sally no more. His hatred of Smoke had nearly consumed him. And Clint felt, Clint knew, somehow, that Tilden was not going to win this fight. Oh, he would succeed in running out the Nesters who were weak to begin with, like Peyton. But Peyton was long gone, and them that remained was the tough ones. Not cold-eyed tough, like Luis Chamba and Kane and Sanderson, and Valentine and Suggs and them other gun slicks Tilden had on the payroll, but tough like with staying power. And now Tilden wanted to tree a western town. Clint lifted his eyes to meet the eyes of Tilden Franklin.
Are you not capable of giving those orders, Clint?
Don't push on me, boss. Don't do it.
Clint, we've been together for years. We spent more than a third of our lives together now. We've had some rough times before, but you own 10% of this ranch. You could have taken your profits and left years ago, started your own spread, but you stayed with me. Just stay with me a while longer, huh? You'll see. Things will be like they were years ago.
Boss, things ain't never gonna be like they was. Not ever again.
Tilden grabbed a vase.
It will! Now you're gonna see, Clint. You just get rid of Smoke Jensen, and those Nesters will fold up and slink away. Now get out, Clint. Carry out my goddamn orders. Get out, goddamn you!
Yeah. All right, boss. Fine. I'll get out.
Send the boy in to clean up this mess!
Clint stood for a moment on the front porch. His eyes swept the immediate holdings of Tilden Franklin.
Thousands and thousands of acres. Too goddamn much for one man, and that silly bastard isn't content with it. He wants more, but not with my help.
As Clint walked to his quarters, he thought of what he'd pack. He would take only what he had to travel light, one pack horse. Clint had money. Being a very frugal man, he had banked most of his salary and the profits from selling the cows over the years. He smiled, but it was not a pleasant smile. Tilden didn't know that Clint owned land up on the Gunnison, up near Blue Mesa. Owned it under the name of Matthew Harrison. Everybody around here knew him as Clint Harris. He changed his name as a snot-nosed boy when he ran off from his hometown down in Texas after he'd shot his abusive stepfather. Clint never knew whether he'd killed the man or not. He'd just taken off. And that was what he was going to do now. Just take off. The foreman had not had a good night's sleep since the awfulness with Velvet Colby. He sat down at his rough-hewn desk and slowly wrote out instructions on a piece of paper. He soon finished the letter.
Hey, Singer.
Yeah, boss.
Singer, can you read and write?
Well, hell yeah. I finished the sixth grade.
Fine. Come on in.
Clint pointed to the letter.
Sign your name where it says witness.
Yes, sir. Here we go. You want me to date this, Mr. Clint?
Yeah. Good thought, Singer.
There you go.
Thanks. See you around.
Clint looked around his Spartan living quarters. Looked around for one last time. He could see nothing left that he wished to take.
Hey, God, I know I've got a lot to answer for, and I can understand if you're angry at me. Just let me live long enough to do this one thing to show I'm sorry. That's all I ask.
Clint rode into Big Rock and tied his horses at the post outside the Big Rock Saloon. As he was stepping up onto the still raw-smelling boardwalk, he saw Johnny North and that Belle Colby woman coming out the general store. They stopped to chat with Lawyer Hunt Brooke. Clint removed his gun belt and walked slowly over to them. Johnny saw the man coming at him and instinctively slipped the thongs off the hammers of his Colts. Then he noticed that Clint wasn't armed. His eyes saw the pack horse.
What the hell?
Clint had some papers in his right hand. He stopped about 25 feet from the trio.
I'm friendly.
Come on.
Clint held the papers out to Belle. Slowly, she took them.
It won't make up for what was done to your daughter and your husband, but it's something I'd like to do.
Belle, Johnny, and Hunt watched him swing into the saddle and ride out of their lives.
Let me see those papers, Belle.
Huh? Oh, sure.
The lawyer quickly scanned first one paper, then the others, which were older, slightly yellowing around the edges. He began to smile.
What is it, Mr. Brooke?
Why, Belle, you own 10% of the TF Ranch. I think you have just become a very wealthy woman.
Yes, sir?
God damn it, boy, are you dim? Clint told you to come in here half an hour ago and clean up this mess.
I'm sorry, but this is the first I heard of it.
What? What the hell is wrong with him? Go get Clint for me, boy.
Sir, Mr. Clint is gone.
Gone? Where, damn it?
He packed up and rolled out. His quarters is empty, and so is the bunkhouse. Old Ramon at the stable says all the punchers packed up and left, following Mr. Clint.
Get out of here.
Yes, sir. I most certainly will do that, Mr. Tilden.
Goddamn kid.
Tilden just kept pushing paper, soon losing track of time.
Bring me a cup of coffee, boy. Boy! You bring me a cup of coffee, or I'll take a whip to your lazy greaser ass!
Tilden Franklin, the man who would be king, suddenly realized he was alone in his large, fine house.
I'm gonna kill you, Jensen. I'm gonna bring Fontana to its knees first, and then I'm gonna burn your goddamn Big Rock to the ground, and then I'm gonna kill you and have your woman.
Tilden walked to a rack and took down his gun belt, buckling it around his hips. He put his hat on his head. Tilden Franklin's ex-house boy had already walked halfway to Fontana when he heard the hooves. He didn't know what they meant, other than that a lot of riders seemed to be in a big hurry. He shifted his heavy satchel to his other hand and trudged on, walking along the side of the rutted dirt road.
Who could that be? Oh, Dios mio!
There he is! Ride the insubordinate bastard down!
The riders galloped along, leaving the houseboy lying in the road, his blood staining and dampening the dust. They were 50-odd strong, drunk, not with alcohol, but with the power given them by Tilden Franklin. Raw, unbridled killing power. He was paying them good money and offering them immunity and total impunity from the law.
Tilden and his gunhawks coming fast. Get ready.
How many, Stonewall?
Too damn many. Give me an express gun.
Sheriff Carson, Tilden is out.
I know it. Take the back, Dave. Get a weapon from the wall. Where are the others?
I seen Slim hauling his ashes out of here. I think Joel is out in the county somewhere serving a notice from Judge Proctor.
Stay calm. We got some food, we got a pump for water. Tilden wanted this place built of stone for strength, so that's gonna work against him. It'd take a cannon to bring these walls down.
Hey, what about me?
The sheriff and his two deputies turned towards the voice. A miner in the lockup was looking pretty unhappy. He was about to miss a chance to shoot somebody.
Stonewall, turn him loose and give him a shotgun.
The miner stepped out from the cell and looked out at the angry group of heavily armed riders.
Who the hell is all them people?
That's Tilden Franklin and his gun hands. Would you like to go out and kiss him, L.O.?
Would you like to kiss another part of me?
Here you go. Use it well.
I'm going out. Dave, watch my back.
Yes, sir.
Hey! 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 I'm the sheriff of this town. I am ordering you to break this up and leave this town, or you're all be under arrest. Now you got to the count of three. One. You son of a bitch! Shit!
The sheriff and his deputies ran to gun ports in the wall. Blood spilled onto the dusty street as the shotguns cleared half a dozen saddles of living flesh, depositing dead, dying, and badly wounded men into the dirt. Louis Longbond stepped out of his gaming tent, a Colt in each hand.
Bastard!
The man who owned and cooked at the Good Eats Cafe stepped out of his place with a Sharps 50. The man was a Civil War veteran with 4 hard years of fighting as a Union cavalry. Damned if he was gonna let his town get terrorized. Big Mama ran out of her place and literally jerked one gun hand off his horse.
Come here, you useless prick!
Billy, up in the loft of the stable with his newly bought .22 caliber rifle, grinned as he took careful aim at the big man on the big horse. Gently, he squeezed the trigger. Shot Tilden Franklin smack dab in one cheek of his ass. Tilden's horse wheeled around and took off at a gallop out of town. The gun hands followed closely behind. Nobody freed a western town in the 1870s. Nobody. Nearly every man in every town was a combat veteran of some war, whether it be against Indians, outlaws, the Union Blue, or the Rebel Gray. Nobody freed a western town. Judge Proctor was furious. Since he had begun his program of alcohol abstention, he had realized he was supposed to help maintain law and order, not make a mockery of it by drunken antics. The judge signed arrest warrants for Tilden Franklin and as many of the TF gunslicks that people on the street could recall being present during the shooting spree. Louis Longmont put up $5,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of Tilden Franklin. And the judge had Haywood's printing press cranking out wanted posters. He then had them posted throughout the county. Louis thought it all hysterically amusing. Now everybody, or most everybody, knew that no one was really going to try to arrest Tilden Franklin. Or for that matter, any of the TF gun hogs. But it did keep him out of Fontana and Big Rock. Besides, the old gunslingers had ringed the TF range, just waiting for a hand to step off of it, which left Tilden's new foreman, Luis Chambra, and all the TF gunslingers with only one way to collect their top wages, punching cattle, which pissed those gunslicks off mightily. So it went, until two things happened that would forever alter the histories of Fontana and Big Rock, and the lives of most of those who called them home. Bell Colby, accompanied by Johnny North and lawyer Hunt Brook, claimed her 10% of the TF. And Utah Slim finally made his move, setting out to do what he had been paid to do, kill Smoke Jensen.
Oh, God damn it. What?
Rider's coming, boss.
Yeah? Who are they?
Can't tell yet. But there's a woman in the buckboard, I can tell that much.
All right.
Tilden heaved himself up and out of bed. The interior of his bedroom was as nasty as Tilden Franklin's unwashed body and unshaven face. For a moment, the big man swayed unsteadily on his booted feet. He stumbled to a water basin and washed his face. Lifting his dripping face, he stared into a mirror. He was shocked at his appearance. A very prideful man, Tilden had always been a neat dresser and almost fastidious when it came to washing his body. Now he could smell his own body odors wafting up to assail his nostrils.
Tell him I'll be out in 15 minutes, Luis.
See you, boss.
Hurriedly, Tilden washed himself best he could and toweled himself dry. He shaved very carefully, noting his shaking hands. Somehow, he managed not to nick his face. For some reason, Tilden felt that the woman in the buckboard was Sally Jensen, coming to see him. He was shocked when he stepped out onto the porch and saw it was not Sally Jensen. The woman was Belle Colby. With her was Johnny North, the lawyer Hunt Brook, Sheriff Monty Carson, and someone Tilden had never seen before. A man dressed in a dark suit, white shirt, and string tie. His face was tanned and his eyes were hard. He sported a drooping mustache.
Good morning, Franklin. My name is Mitchell, United States Marshal. I don't know who started the war in this part of the country, and I don't much care. But I'm delivering two messages today. One to you, another to Smoke Jensen. The war is over. If I have to come back in here, I'll bring the army with me and declare a state of martial law. You understand all that?
Yes, sir.
Tilden glared at Carson.
Fine. Now then, Lawyer Brooke is here representing Mrs. Colby. Me and Sheriff Carson will just sit here and see that the lady gets her due.
Her due?
Mr. Franklin, my name is Hunt Brooke.
I know who you are.
Yes. I am representing Belle Colby in the matter of her land rights. She has been recently bequeathed a large parcel of your land from its previous owner, and she has come with an offer of fair trade based on current appraised land values.
What?
Clint gave me his land. I'm here to take it.
Oh, there's no way. There's absolutely no way I'm giving some widow nest of mine.
That's why I'm here, Franklin. It's been signed with a witness. The land's already hers by law. You'd best listen to what she's here to offer, or we can continue this conversation back in Denver.
Fine.
I want to see your books, Mr. Franklin. When that is done, I shall determine how much is owed Mrs. Colby. She has confided in me that she is willing to sell her 10% back to you. Once a fair price is determined, by me. Shall we get to it, Mr. Franklin?
Oh, certainly, certainly. I'll get my books. We'll go over them on the porch. All right?
That will be fine, Mr. Franklin.
Luis Chamba had discreetly disappeared into the bunkhouse. He had known who Mitchell was at first sight, and while the Mexican gunfighter felt he could best him, no one in their right mind killed a federal marshal. He had told his men to stay low and out of sight. Chamba felt, along with many of the other gun hands, that Tilden Franklin had just about come to the end of his string. But as long as he could pay the money, they'd stay. Besides, Luis wanted his chance at Smoke Jensen. Now that the elusive gunfighter had finally surfaced, a lot of gun slicks wanted to try their skills against his. Back out on the porch, Tilden seethed as the lawyer went over his books. As far as the money went, the money to buy out Belle Colby, Tilden had that much in the safe inside the house. It wasn't the money. It was the fact that Clint had given his percentage to this trashy Nestor woman. Husband not even cold in the goddamn grave, and she was probably hunching and bumping the gunslinger Johnny North. Trash, that's all she was. Tilden wasn't up for quibbling over the value of the land. He just wanted his holdings intact and this hard-eyed U.S. Marshal out of the area. This goddamn Mitchell was sure wrong on one count, though. The war was not over. Not by a long shot.
I have here the final contract. This figure is agreeable?
Yeah. Where do I sign?
Right here. Very good. Bell, sign here. And witnesses. Marshal Mitchell, Mr. North. Very good. Well, I thank you, Mr. Franklin.
We done here?
Yes. Good day.
Tilden Franklin sat in a chair on his porch and watched him leave. Slowly, the gunfighters began to once more gather.
Luis.
Sir?
Play it close to the vest for a time. Let that damn marshal get clear of this area.
then you're all gonna start earning your wages. I don't care who you have to kill in order to get him, but I want Smoke Jensen dead.
U.S. Marshal Mitchell looked at the legendary gunfighter Smoke Jensen. He was even younger than Mitchell had been led to believe. The man was still a ways from 30.
If I tried real hard, Jensen, I could probably come up with a half dozen arrest warrants for you. You know that, don't you?
But finding people to stand up in court, look me in the eyes, and testify against me might give you some problems.
There is always that to consider, yes.
This war's not over, Marshal. You must know that.
I mean what I say, Jensen. If I have to, I'll bring the army in here. The governor of the state of Colorado is tired of hearing about this place in terms of blood.
Tilden Franklin is a crazy man, Marshal. I don't know why he hates me, but he does. He will never rest until one of us is dead.
I know that, but don't sell him short, Jensen. Not even Luis Chamba is as fast as Tilden Franklin. He's poisoned with a short gun.
He thought he was poisoned with his fists, too.
So I heard. That beating you gave him didn't help matters very much.
It gave me a great deal of satisfaction.
I really hope I never see you again, Jensen. But somehow I feel I will.
I didn't start this, Marshal. But if it comes down to it, I'll damn sure finish it.
The Marshal looked at Smoke for a moment.
There's another reason I came to meet you, Smoke.
I'd figured.
We've received word that somebody's paying good money to see you dead.
Is that true?
Yeah. There's a gun slick in Fontana, but that's as much as our sources could tell me.
Well, there sure are a whole lot of gun slicks in Fontana right now.
That's true.
Your sources tell you who's paying?
I'm afraid not. I figured you might be able to help on that. Other than Tilden Franklin, you know anyone else who might pay a lot of money to have you killed?
You know, I do.
Oh?
My sister, Janie.
Your own sister would pay to have you killed? How dreadful. What kind of person is she?
Ralph and Bountiful were having supper with Smoke and Sally.
She must have a lot of hate in her heart.
I reckon. Well, I just have to be more careful and keep looking over my shoulder from now on. That's something I'm used to doing.
You've got that funny look in your eyes, Smoke.
Ralph, you seen Utah Slim around?
Yeah. Kind of been staying out of the whole country war.
You think he's too smart to get caught up in all this?
Either that, or he's busy in a war of his own.
Well then, that's that. I'm not gonna sit around and wait for a bullet, Sally. I just made up my mind on that.
I felt that was coming.
What are you two talking about?
A showdown. Might as well brace him in the morning and get it over with.
Ralph and Bountiful stopped eating and sat staring at the young gunfighter.
You're discussing this with no more emotion than if you were talking about planting beets.
No point in getting all worked up about it, Ralph. If I try to avoid it, it just prolongs the matter. And maybe some innocent person gets caught up in it and gets hurt. I told you and your friends a time back that we do things differently out here. And I'm not so sure that it isn't the best way.
In the morning?
In the morning.
I'll go in with you.
All right, Ralph. You've proven yourself a good horseman. I hope I'm not offending you if I told you I'm surprised.
Offend me? Hell, when Smoke Jensen tells you you're good at something, you just make sure your head doesn't swell too big.
I'm glad you see it that way.
I was raised on a farm. It's how I learned. And I'm also a very good rifle shot.
Yeah, I noticed you putting that Henry in the boot this morning.
The morning was very clear and very bright as the two men rode toward Fontana. As they worked their way out of the mountains and toward the long valley where Fontana was located, the temperature grew warmer.
You ever shot a man, Ralph?
Nope.
Could you?
Don't ever doubt it.
Won't give it a second thought.
Hey, does Fontana look a bit smaller to you?
It does. The easy pickings have been found and taken out, Ralph. For however long this vein will last, it's going to be hard work, dirty work, and dangerous work. Look yonder. One whole section of Fontana is gone. Half a dozen bars have pulled out.
You're right. At this rate, there'll be nothing left of Fontana by the end of summer.
If that long. If we all can just settle the matter of Tilden Franklin, then we can all get on with the business of living.
Then it'll have to be settled by guns.
Yeah.
Preacher Mar, Smoke. I don't like the look in your eyes, Smoke. Or where those guns are sitting.
afraid so.
Yeah, I had that same look a few times myself, Smoke. Gonna be shooting?
Looks that way, Monty. I'd rather not have it in town if I could help it.
I'd appreciate that, Smoke. But sometimes it can't be helped. I got to thinking after talking with that marshal. It's Utah Slim, ain't it?
Yeah. I got a strong hunch my sister hired him to gun me down.
Son of a bitch. Any other family members of yours I should know about?
Nope. Just the one.
Well, I suppose one's enough.
Suppose.
I seen Utah early this morning sitting on the hotel porch. The only hotel we got left here in Fontana, that is.
Won't be long now. How many businesses are you losing a day?
Half a dozen. As you know, up there in Big Rock, stage is running twice a day now, carrying people out of here.
Seen some TF riders in town as we rode in, and didn't see any of those flyers the judge had printed up. What happened?
Some state man was on the stage 3-4 days ago from the governor's office. He looked at the charges I had against Tilden and his man, told me to take them Dodgers down. They wasn't legal. I took them down.
It was fun while it lasted, though, wasn't it?
Damn sure was.
Hey, Sheriff, I heard Smoke. Oh, hi, Smoke.
Deputy Stonewall, Dave, get the people off the boardwalks. And have either of you seen Utah Slim?
Oh, he's standing down by the corral, leaning up against a post. He's got a half dozen of them punk gunslingers with him. They're looking at Utah like he's some sort of god.
Run them off. I'll not have no mismatched gunfight in this town. Take a shotgun each.
Will do, Sheriff.
Utah is fast, Smoke. He's damn good. I'd rate him with the best.
Better than Valentine?
He don't blow his first shot like Valentine, and he's just as fast.
Right. Well, it's time.
Smoke slipped the leather thongs from the hammers of his Colt and put his hat on his head.
I'd like to talk to Utah first. Find out something about my sister. Hell, I don't even know for sure if she's the one who's behind this. I'll give it a try. Damn. Got quiet out here.
Smoke?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thanks, Ralph. But luck ain't got nothing to do with it.
Smoke walked out onto the shaded boardwalks outside the sheriff's office. He pulled his hat lower over his eyes and eased his Colt's half out of leather a few times, letting them fall back naturally into the oiled leather. He stepped out into the street and turned toward the corral. As he walked down the center of the street, his boots kicking up little pockets of dust, he was conscious of many unseen eyes on him. And even a few he could associate with a body. Stonewall and Dave were on opposite sides of the broad street, both still carrying shotguns. The dooted-up dandies who fancied themselves gunslingers had gathered as close to the corral as the deputies would allow them. Smoke saw the young punk Luke Nations had made Eat Crow, Lester Morgan, Sundance. He had himself some new Colts. And that kid who called himself the Silver Dollar Kid was there, along with a few other no-names who wanted to be gunfighters. Smoke wondered how they got along, where'd they get the eating money. Petty thievery, probably.
How many are you facing, sir?
Just one that I know of, Utah Slim. I think my sis Janie sent him after me.
Lewis paced Smoke, staying on the boardwalk.
Yes, it would be like her.
Where is she, Lewis?
Tombstone, last I heard. Running a red light place. She's worth a lot of money. Richards' money, I presume.
Yeah. Richards ain't got no use for it. I never heard of no Wells Fargo armored stage following no hearse.
I watch your back, Smoke.
Thanks.
Smoke kept on walking. Lewis fell back, keeping an eye on Smoke's back trail. Then the corral loomed up. Utah Slim standing by it. Smoke's eyes flicked upward to the loft of the barn. Billy was staring wide-eyed out of the loft door.
Billy, get your butt out of that loft and across the street. Right now, boy. Move.
Yes, sir.
Billy slipped down the hay rope to the street. He darted across the expanse and got behind a water trough. Utah Slim watched Billy run from his railing.
That there's a good kid, Smoke. Funny the other week when he shot Tilden in the ass.
Yeah, I'd like to have seen that myself.
Ain't got nothing personal against you, Jensen. Won't you know that?
Just another job, right, Utah?
That's the way it is.
My sister hire you?
Damned if I know. Some woman named Janie down at Tombstone paid me a lot of money up front. Come to think of it, y'all do favor some.
That's my darling sister.
Makes me proud I ain't got no sister.
Why don't you just get on your horse and ride on out, Utah? I don't want to have to kill you.
You ain't gonna kill me.
You want a wager on that, Slim?
Yeah, I'll bet 100.
Taken.
How much did she pay you, Utah?
Several big ones, boy. She's a whore, you know.
I heard.
Yeah, I told her as part of the payment, I'd have to have me a taste of it.
Is that right?
Oh, sure is. Right good, too.
You enjoyed it, huh?
I did for a fact. Why do you ask?
Utah fell to his knees, his left arm looped around the center railing of the corral. His shirt sprouted two red stains. The killer managed to drag his Colt out of leather and cock it. That seemed to take all his strength. The slug tore up the dirt at his knee.
How come you asked me if I enjoyed it?
Because you damn sure ain't gonna get no more, Utah.
Well, that's just about all of the Glenlivet.
It was damn fine while it lasted.
That it was. Figured this was as good a time as any to finish it off. May I pay you a compliment, Smoke Jensen?
I reckon so, Louis Longmont.
I have seen them all, Smoke. All the so-called great gunfighters. Clay Allison, John Wesley Hardin, Bill Longley, Jim Miller. I've drank with Wild Bill Hickok and Jim, Ed, and Bat Masterson. I've gambled with Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp. I've seen them all in action. But you are the fastest gun I have ever seen in my life.
Thank you, Louis. But I'll tell you a secret.
I'll bet you double eagle I already know what it is.
No bets, Louis.
You wish you weren't the faster gun.
You got that right.
The men finished their drinks and stepped out onto the boardwalk. The photographer had set up his equipment at the corral and was taking his shots of Utah Slim. The dudeed up dandies had gathered around, managing to get themselves in almost every shot the man took.
Fool.
Look at them with their hands on the butts of their guns. They'll be bragging about that picture for the rest of their lives.
However short they may be.
Yes.
Ralph walked up, joining the gambler and the gunfighter. Lewis smiled at him.
I would invite you into my tent for a drink, Preacher Morrow, but I'm afraid I might offend you.
I'm not adverse to a cool beer, Mr. Longmont.
Well, I'll just be damned.
Oh, I think not, sir. How is your orphanage up in Boulder doing? Or that free hospital out in San Francisco?
For a man of the cloth, you do get around, don't you, Ralph?
I wasn't always a preacher, Mr. Longmont.
Well, don't let the news of my philanthropic urges get out. It might destroy my reputation.
Hell, Lewis, I don't even know what that means.
The town of Fontana had begun to die, slowly at first, and then more rapidly as the gold vein began to peter out. More businesses shut down, packed up, and pulled out. The rip-roaring boomtown was not yet quite busted, but a hole had been pierced in the balloon. Those who elected to stay until the very end of the vein had been found were slowly shifting their trading to the new town of Big Rock. But since the mayor of Big Rock, Wilbur Mason, refused to allow gambling and hurdy-gurdy girls in, the town of Fontana soon became known as the Pleasure Palace of the High Country. That was both a blessing and curse for Sheriff Monte Carson and his two remaining deputies. A curse because it kept them on the run at all hours. A blessing because it kept them all in steady work. And doubly so for Monte, because it gave him a new direction in life to pursue. One that he found, much to his surprise, he enjoyed very much. Lewis had, of course, noticed the change in Monte, and in his quiet way tried to help the man, as did Judge Proctor, Lewis helping the man with his reading and Proctor loaning him books on the law. And Tilden Franklin maintained a very low profile, as did most of his gun slicks. Tilden wanted the area to settle down, stopped attracting the governor's attention. More importantly, He wanted that damned hard-eyed U.S. Marshal to stay the hell out of the high country. But both Tilden and Smoke knew that the undeclared war in the high country was not over, that the uneasy truce was apt to break apart at any time. And when it did, the High Lonesome was going to run red with blood. Someone was going to come out on top. Tilden was making plans for that someone to be named Tilden Franklin. And he had not given up on his plans to possess Sally Jensen. Nope, not at all. They'd just been shelved for a time. The festering blot on the face of the high country began to leak its corruption when Paul Jackson rode into Fontana after a lonely 6 weeks in the mountains. Paul had heard of the new town of Big Rock, but he'd never seen it. He'd heard talk of Fontana slowly dying, but had given it little thought. Paul had been busy digging gold, lots of gold, more gold than he had ever imagined he'd ever find. His saddlebags were stuffed with the precious dust. His pack horses were loaded down. He rode slowly into Fontana and could not believe his eyes. He had remembered a town just 6 weeks past that was full of people. The place looked dead now. Well, maybe not dead, but definitely dying. All the good people were gone. The place looked to be occupied by whores and gamblers and pimps and ne'er-do-wells. It made Paul feel kind of uncomfortable. He reined up in front of the bank, but the damn bank was closed. A deputy walked by.
Hey, deputy!
Something wrong, Paul?
Where's the bank?
Ain't got no bank no more, Paul. It shut down when the gold began to peter out.
Paul, not a bright person to begin with, had to think about that for a minute or so.
The gold is petering out?
Now, Stonewall never figured himself to be no genius, but even he was a shining light compared to this yo-yo standing in front of the empty bank building.
Yeah, Paul, the vein is about gone. Now, if you got gold, we can store it at the jail till you can figure out what to do with it.
I plan on taking my woman and my gold out of here. We're going to San Francisco and become man and wife.
Your woman?
Yes. I should like to see Bountiful now. So, if you'll excuse me.
Wait. Bountiful? The minister's wife?
Yes.
Paul, they don't live here in Fontana no more. The preacher quit his church and took to farming. He bought himself some land up near the Sugarloaf. He preaches every Sunday morning at the new church up in Big Rock.
Where's Bountiful?
Why, hell, man, she's with her husband.
Not when she sees me.
Hey, Stonewall.
Yeah, Sheriff?
The hell was all that about?
Sheriff, I don't rightly know. That Paul Jackson never was too bright, but I think the time up in the mountains has flipped him over the edge. He's back. Said he's loaded down with gold and is going to take Ralph Morrow's wife and marry her in San Francisco.
Strange. But Paul's going to be in for a surprise if he tries to mess with Ralph's wife. That preacher will whip his butt up one mountain and down the other.
Surely Paul ain't that dumb.
Don't bet on it. Did he really have them horses loaded with gold?
Said he did. Looked full to bursting.
Strange. Nobody's found any gold for weeks around here.
Paul sat on his horse in front of the Morrow cabin. Bountiful was outside, her man's shirt a little stained with sweat. Obviously, Ralph was making her work the fields. She would no doubt just jump at the chance to run from that awful husband of hers.
Bountiful, I've come for you.
What? You've come for me?
Yes. Now get your things. I'm a rich man, Bountiful. We can have a beautiful life together. I'll buy you everything you ever dreamed of.
Oh, Paul. Everything I have ever dreamed of is right here. Look around you. What you see is what I want. I have it all.
But I don't understand, Bountiful. The way you looked at me.
Bountiful slouched and frowned. It had been that way all her life. Men were constantly misreading her, mistaking friendliness for passion. It was very difficult for a beautiful woman to have men friends.
Paul, I like you. You're a good man, and I am happy that you found gold. I hope it brings you lots of happiness. And you'll find a nice lady, I just know it. Now, you better leave.
Smoke and Ralph rode into the yard. Sally stepped out of the cabin where she had been making curtains for Bountiful.
Hello, Paul. How have you been?
Very well, thank you, Ralph. I've come for your wife.
I beg your pardon?
Bountiful looked at Sally and shook her head. Sally knew the story. Bountiful had told her that Paul was infatuated with her.
Leave, Paul. You've got everything all mixed up in your mind. It isn't the way you think it is.
Is, too.
Now, Paul, you don't want to make trouble for us. Why don't you just leave?
No. No. No, no. You don't understand. Look.
Paul took out a knife. He cut open one saddlebag. Yellow dust poured to the ground.
See, Bountiful? See? It's all for you. I did it for you. You can have it all.
I don't want it, Paul. It's yours. You keep it.
Paul stood like a big dumb ox, slowly shaking his head. It was all so confusing to him. He had thought he had it all worked out in his mind, but something was wrong.
Oh, I know. You're afraid to leave because of Tilden and Franklin. I can fix that for you, Bountiful. I really can.
What do you mean, Paul?
You stay out of this. You're one of the reasons Bountiful won't go with me.
Huh?
I can use a gun too, Bountiful. I'll show you. I'll show you all.
Smoke looked at Paul's pistol. It was in a flap-type holster, the flap secured. Smoke figured he could punch Paul out before any real damage was done, if he went for his gun.
I'll come back a hero. I'll be the hero of the valley, Bountiful.
Paul cut the saddlebags loose and let them fall to the ground.
You keep this for me, Bountiful. Play with it. It's not as pretty as you, but it's pretty. I'll be back, Bountiful. You go on and pack your things. Wait for me.
Paul's not very bright. What in the world do you suppose he's going to do?
Smoke squatted down and he fingered the dust and the nuggets. He looked at him closely. Then he stood back up.
It's fool's gold. All of it.
If it wasn't so pitiful, it would be funny. But Paul really believes after he does whatever in the world he plans to do, that Bountiful is going with him. I wonder what he has in mind.
What was that about Tilden Franklin?
He said I was afraid to come with him because of Tilden Franklin. That's silly. Why should I be afraid of that man?
Hey, boss!
What? Who the hell's coming? Is that fool shopkeeper's brother, Paul Jackson?
Well, that one ain't playing with a fool dick. He's the one who used to follow the preacher's wife around with a tongue hanging out like a big old ugly hound dog.
He looks like a hound dog. A goofy one.
Tilden slipped the thongs off his six guns. Luis Chamba noticed the movement.
What's wrong, boss?
I don't know. Just something about the way he's riding that bothers me.
You want me to kill him?
No, Valentine. Let's see what he's got on his mind first.
Paul rode up to the house.
May I dismount?
Sure, Jackson. Climb down. What can I do for you?
Tilden noticed that the flap on Paul's military-type holster was missing. Looked like it had been freshly cut off. The gun was riding loose.
I've come to meet you man-to-man, Mr. Franklin.
Well, Jackson, here I am. You speak your piece and carry your ass off of my range.
I've come to kill you.
Is that so? Why?
Personal reasons.
Oh, now, Jackson, don't I deserve a better explanation than that?
Your men seem to find this amusing. Why?
Get off my range, you silly bastard.
No! Draw, goddamn you!
Paul struggled to get up on his feet, ignoring his bloody shoulder.
Stupid son of a bitch.
You're never gonna kill me. You've terrorized my woman for too long, and I'll...
Paul's other arm went limp, rendering the man helpless. The fourth bullet struck Paul in the stomach.
Time to his goddamned old nag and send him on his way.
The gun slicks tied Paul upright in his saddle and slapped the already spooked horse on the rump. Paul went bouncing and swaying down the road, unconscious. It was almost breaking dawn when Charlie Starr came to Smoke's cabin door.
Charlie!
early start, Smoke. Got news for you.
Lord, can't be good news considering the time of day. Go on, Smoke. Find out what's wrong.
In his long handles, a Colt in his right hand, Smoke went to the door.
Oh, morning, Charlie. Come on in. I'll make us some coffee.
Do me a favor. Put your damn pants on first. You ain't no sight to see first thing in the morning.
Smoke put on coffee to boil, visited the outhouse, then sat down at the kitchen table.
What's wrong, Charlie?
Paul Jackson was found late yesterday afternoon by some miners. He was tied to his horse. Somebody had a good time putting a lot of unnecessary lead in a fool. He's alive, but just barely. He told Doc Spaulding he braced Tilden Franklin out at the TF Ranch House. Then he went into a coma. Doc says he probably won't come out of it. My question is, why'd he do it?
I think he went a little mad, Charlie. Came to visit Ralph and Bountiful yesterday after spending 6 weeks out in the wild digging up fool's gold. Said he was going to marry Bountiful and live in San Francisco. She wasn't too keen on the idea, so Paul figured it was because of Tilden.
Where'd he get that idea?
Don't know. Sometimes spending that much time out in the wild makes one notional.
I know that. But there ain't nothing between Bountiful and Paul Jackson, is there?
No. It was all in Paul's mind.
Fool's gold. Finding that and thinking it was real might have been what pushed him over the edge.
How many times was he shot, Charlie?
Both shoulders, leg, and stomach. Me and Monty been up all night talking about it. He admitted going out there and bracing Tilden. Tilden had a right to protect himself. But tying the man to that horse was cruel. Still, the judge says there ain't no laws to cover that.
How's Ed taking it?
Harder than he'll let on. Monty said the man was crying last night after leaving the doc's office. He's tore up pretty bad. And he's talking about going out there and seeing Tilden.
That wouldn't be smart on his part.
He's a growed-up man, Smoke. I sure can't stop him if that's what he wants to do.
And he thought Tilden hung the stars in the moon.
Yeah, lots of folks seeing the light about that crazy bastard. Monty told me to tell you something else, too.
Yeah?
Tilden's replaced all them gun hawks that was shot in town. But he's scraping the bottom of the slime pit doing it. He's hiring the real hard cases. Cold-blooded killers. Range war types. He's hiring some of them that was vigilantes down on the Oklahoma-Texas border. He's hiring thugs, punks, cattle thieves, horse thieves. Anybody who can pack a gun and even just brag about using one. Them dandies in town, the Silver Dollar Kid and Sundance and them other punks, Tilden hired them too.
I guess we'd all better get ready for the balloon to bust, Charlie. I don't see any other way out of it.
Sally entered the kitchen with fresh donuts and coffee.
Here you are, boys.
Thank you, ma'am.
You heard Sally?
Couldn't help. Our cabin's not made for private conversations. I feel sorry for Paul. He wasn't quite right in the head.
Yep. Out here, ma'am, a man straps on a six-shooter. That gun makes him 10 feet tall. Out here, there's a saying, God didn't make man equal. Colonel Colt did.
Paul Jackson died mid-morning, the day after he was shot. And once more, the Undertaker's hack rumbled through the streets of Fontana. The streets were far less busy than they had been just a week before. The one remaining hotel had already announced plans to close. Several TF riders had come to town, and the story of what had happened at the TF ranch was beginning to spread throughout the rapidly shrinking town.
I'm telling you, he was flopping around like a damn fish out of water, screaming, "Oh God, it hurts so bad! Please, Mr. Franklin, make it stop!"
Deputy Stonewall had been nursing a drink on the bar, trying to mind his own damn business.
Hey, now that's enough, boys. Paul Jackson had been a decent fella. Now, sure, he might have been a bit off in the head, but he'd been no thief or footpad. Just a hard-working guy. He deserved a better death than the one he got.
The TF gun slicks set their shot glasses and beer mugs on the bar and turned to face Stonewall.
You criticizing Mr. Franklin, deputy?
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon I am. A fair shooting is one thing. Torturing a man for sport is another thing.
Mr. Franklin ain't here to defend himself.
You're here.
Monte Carson chose that time to step inside. Stonewall was leaning against the bar, hard hit, but he had managed to drop two of the TF gunslingers. The front of Stonewall's shirt was stained with blood.
Oh, shit!
Monty's Colt started belching smoke and fire and lead. Two TF riders went down. But Monty was hit twice in the side and upper chest. Stoneball died on his feet, his gun still clutched in his fingers. Monty was knocked back against the wall, losing one Colt on the way. He lifted a second Colt and aimed at the last remaining TF gun slick. Singer, wounded but not fatally, scrambled out the door.
Yeah! Hey! Get back here, you son of a bitch!
Dave jumped into his saddle and took off after the TF gun slick. He chased after him, leaving town. Ran slap into a dozen TF riders on their way in town.
Oh, shit!
Dave fell from the saddle. Dave died where he had fallen, the deputy's horse standing over its master, nudging at him with its nose. Bob Colby reined up in Smoke's yard in a cloud of dust.
Mr. Smoke! Smoke!
Smoke and Sally both ran from the cabin.
Bob, what's the matter?
Mr. Luke told me to tell you to come quick. Tilden Franklin's men done took over Fontana, and this time they done her good. Sheriff Carson is hit hard, and all his deputies is dead.
Where's Johnny?
He took Ma over to the neighbor's house, then said he would meet you at Big Rock.
I'm on my way, Bob. Charlie!
Charlie Starr came out from the cabin, finishing up another bear sign.
What's the problem?
Pick some men. We're going to Fontana. The rest should stay at the ranch in case any TF men decide we're worth attacking. I'm going to let Ralph know what's happening, too.
Soon, Smoke and the old gunslinger lit out from Big Rock.
Ah-hee! About damn time! I was beginning to think we were never going to see no action.